I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Welcome back to Radio Times. Years ago, leaders in Philadelphia were begging young adults to move to or stay in the city, and it looks like they answered the call. According to a new report by the Pew Charitable Trusts, the population of 20 to 34-year-olds in Philadelphia increased by 100,000 between 2006 and 2012. That's not just a dramatic increase for this city that had been losing population. It also outpaced other major U.S. cities. While that has been good for Philadelphia, it looks like more than half of them plan on leaving in the next 5 to 10 years, again, according to this report. We asked Larry Eichel, a director of the Philadelphia program at Pew and author of this report, Millennials in Philadelphia, to join us on Radio Times. And Larry Eichel, nice to have you back with us.
Great to be here, Marty.
Been a couple of years. Also with us is Matt Olish, and he's on the board of directors of Friends of Chester Arthur. That's a school in South Philadelphia. He's also a local litigator with the law firm of Fox Rothschild, and he and his wife and 3-year-old son live in the Graduate Hospital area of Philadelphia. And Matt, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
It's a pleasure to be here.
Let me go back, Larry, with you to 10, 20 years ago when, as I said in my introduction, leaders were wanting to bring young people into the city or have them stay here. And it looks in many ways like people did do that.
Yeah, it really does. I'm You know, those of us who have been around this area for a long time are used to the fact that often when there are big positive trends in urban America, they happen in other places and not in Philadelphia. The attraction of young adults to the city is a big positive urban trend, and it is happening here big time. And that's a very good thing.
It is. And why do you think, and we'll turn to a young person sitting next to you, but what has drawn these young people to the city?
I think part of it is that this generation of young adults, the so-called millennials, are really attracted to urban life. And this is sort of across the country. They like the diversity of it in every sense. The people, the lifestyles, the jobs, the experiences, all of that. They don't want to live in the suburbs. A lot of them lived there. They find that boring. They want to be in the city. They like the excitement, the convenience, the fact that it is more environmentally friendly. All sorts of reasons they like it. Why Philadelphia? I mean, the core of Philadelphia, and by that I mean center city and the surrounding neighborhoods, have clearly have become attractive places to live for all those reasons, and compared to Boston, New York, Washington, some of the other major cities, particularly the East Coast cities, Philadelphia is relatively inexpensive.
Would you agree with that? What has brought you or what kept you in Philadelphia?
For the most part, I do agree. I mean, for us, it was really three things. It was diversity, it was accessibility and convenience, and it was affordability. We knew we wanted to be in a city. We were both here in Philadelphia. We were educated here at Penn, and it just made the most sense. It was kind of a no-brainer. I spent a summer working in New York City for a summer job with a law firm, and it was like night and day. I mean, you walk around in New York City, it's crowded. It's huge. I mean, to get from one place to another, it takes forever. Philadelphia is so walkable. You can get really anywhere to anywhere in a very short amount of time. And to live here, I mean, when you compare the cost of living in Philadelphia with all these other cities, it really makes the most sense for us.
You know, one of the things that everybody used to bemoan years ago was that so many of the graduates of our universities were not staying. And there's not a lot of hard data on this. I know Campus Philly has tried to put together some, but it certainly appears that a higher percentage of graduates are staying, or at least that they kind of come to the end of their education with the idea that staying in Philadelphia would be a good option if they can make it work.
But reading your report, though, Larry, I believe I read that something like 30% of the people that we're talking about, these so-called millennials, are poor.
Well, sure. I mean, I think it was it was in that neighborhood,
right.
Although the statistics on that this age group in the census are a little questionable, because students who are not living in dorms or not living with their parents can be considered poor, and I think they're often not poor in the sense that we think. But right, I mean, it's important to understand that millennials are not all, you know,
Penn-educated
lawyers.
Right.
You know,
like
I mean,
Matt, yes.
A lot of them are are poor. A lot of them are black, Hispanic, Asian. I mean, the whole gamut, they have the same variety that we have in the city as a whole.
Matt, you and your wife have put down some roots in South Philadelphia. You're involved in this local school. Your child isn't old enough yet to go to that school. So what is keeping you in the city?
Well, so our involvement with the school began actually before our son was even born, before we really even made the decision to have a child. I mean, we moved into the neighborhood. We started to get involved with the school because we didn't know anything about it. And we thought, we'd heard certain things, and we thought it's only fair that we get out to the school, take an interest, and just see what it's all about. When we got there, we realized it wasn't much different than the public school that I was raised in, that I grew up in Central Jersey. So things just kind of took off from there in terms of rallying neighborhood support for the school. And it started out as an exercise in community organizing, but it's really become an exercise now in neighborhood building and getting everyone in the neighborhood involved to support the school. So we are staying here because we're committed to that. We're committed to the idea of public education, and we've taken such a vested interest in the school. We don't want to just run to the suburbs for an easier, I don't want to say easier, but you know, for something that's already perceived to be a better educational option. We think we have a great educational option right here. We think it's a lot of it is because of our involvement and our participation, and we value that participation. And we think it's really spread throughout the neighborhood to everyone. So it's been a great experience.
And Larry, I mean, what's interesting is there are a lot of people like Matt, but also looking at this group, there are also a lot of people that, because of children and schooling, are thinking about leaving the city or planning at some point to leave the city.
Right. I think a lot of, you know, there may not be, not everyone's like Matt.
No.
But I think there are a lot of people now who come to the city with a desire to stay. And you know, there are some economists and other sociologists who've looked at this, and they believe that millennials have a stronger commitment to urban life than previous generations did, which means it'll take perhaps more to push them out of the city than it has pushed generations in the past. So I think a lot of people would like to stay in the city, even and people with kids. Certainly some of them are discouraged by what's been going on with the school district. But I think a lot of them are hoping that things will change. That I think there is, you know, the attraction to urban life, you know, I think you will see people trying to stay as long as they can.
Well, it's interesting you say that because we got some emails over the last 24 hours. And I have to say, long stories about either staying in the city or wishing that they could be in the city. Really wistful and heartfelt emails of people like Matt's age, struggling with this decision about whether to stay or whether to go.
Yeah, I mean, certainly when I went through that when my kids were young, I know that there were people who felt like Matt, but I don't think there were as many. I think there are more now, and you know, it's up to the city to try to take advantage of this and to do what can be done to make it easier for them to stay.
And what should the city do to make it easier?
Well, I mean,
big things.
They're big things. Unfortunately, these are the big issues. I mean, they are. You know, what our poll told us was that the things people listed as the reasons most likely to cause them to leave were sort of job opportunities and career and education and child rearing. And obviously those are huge issues, not easily solved.
It's interesting, Matt, though. You said you looked at your local public school, Chester Arthur, and once you got inside, you saw it wasn't perhaps as bad as maybe you thought or other people had told you about, that there was something you could work with.
Yeah, I think a lot of it was perception going in. We had moved to the neighborhood. We admittedly hadn't really considered our local school when moving to the neighborhood. We just kind of went with it when we got there. And we got in, we met a lot of the teachers, we spoke to everyone in the school, and we found this is really not much different than what we knew growing up. There's always ways you can make a school better. Community involvement is one of those ways, and it's within everyone's control. With everything going on with the budget and financial woes, community involvement, every neighborhood can take ownership of their school and get involved. And so we decided to do that. I think it's had really positive results for the school. It's made it what we saw as a perfectly good school, a fine option. We had no problem sending our kid there at that point in time, even better. And I think it's really become one of the, you know, trending upward schools in the district.
And I can I assume that you're not alone in your neighborhood, that this organization includes other people like yourself?
Oh, absolutely. We have a board of about 9 people, our board of directors, and our outreach in the neighborhood extends far beyond that core group of directors. I mean, we have support widespread throughout the neighborhood, young families, people who have been in the neighborhood for years and years and years, businesses, small businesses, partnerships with large businesses in the city. I mean, we've really used all of our resources to branch out and do whatever we can to support the school.
Is that a lot of work?
It can be, yeah, absolutely. But it's work that's very worthwhile. And I think it's when you think about the big picture, I mean, there's probably no more important work that can be done.
Yeah, talking about education of children. And Larry, you were talking about the city needing to, you know, encourage people like Matt, support people like Matt to stay in the city. I'm wondering about just quality of life issues, dealing with bureaucracy, the tax structure. I mean, are these all issues that you think the city needs to address if wanting to keep Matt in the city?
Well, obviously it's different for everyone. But as I say, in our polling, that jobs and career opportunities came up number one, schools, child rearing number two, public safety number three. The sort of government tax issues were pretty far down the list. You know, I think for most young adults, taxes are not a big concern. They may become a bigger concern later on, but they're not a top drawer. I mean, jobs and schools are really the two most important things. But I think that groups like Matt's getting involved in a school, before your own kid even goes. I mean, that's a really positive sign. And I think that's sort of evidence of the commitment that some millennials have to, you know, urban life as a long-term lifestyle, not just a phase in your life.
About 40 seconds. Go ahead, Matt.
Sure. It's interesting that you mentioned dealing with the bureaucracy and certain, you know, institutional obstacles that some people might perceive as being there. I think I should just mention the school district has been so unbelievably supportive of us, recognizing what we're doing for the school. Dr. Height, we've met with him. He has been so in our corner with everything that we're doing that I think it really should be an inspiration for other groups to do similar things and just reach out to Dr. Height, to his staff, because I think they really recognize and value this sort of contribution.
Well, let's take that short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation. That's Matt Olesch. He's on the board of a director of actually, you're the head of it, are you not?
Oh, no, my wife is the president.
Oh, your wife is the president.
I'm the director.
I knew someone in the family was. Nonetheless,
right.
On the board of directors of Friends of Chester Arthur, that's a school in South Philadelphia, a local litigator with the law firm of Fox Rothschild. Also with us, Larry Eichel, a director of the Philadelphia program at the Pew Charitable Trust, talking about a new report, Pew's report called Millennials in Philadelphia, a promising but fragile boom. Give us a call, 1-888-477-9499. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Abington Health supports WHYY. Heart valve problems cause fatigue, shortness of breath, chest discomfort, and dizziness. Traditionally, replacing a heart valve required open heart surgery. Now with TAVR, physicians at Abington can insert an expandable heart valve through a small incision and feed the valve to the heart using a catheter-based method. It may be an option for patients who cannot undergo open heart surgery. For more information, abingtonhealth.org/valve. abingtonhealth.org/valve.
Tonight, an NPR News special, live coverage of President Obama's State of the Union Address. I'm Robert Siegel. Join me for in-depth analysis and reaction from members of Congress. You'll also hear the Republicans' response to the president's speech, an NPR News special, President Obama's State of the Union Address.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY-TV, online at WHYY.org, and right here on WHYY-FM.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Next time on Here and Now, President Obama's Promise Zone in Kentucky. Will it make a difference?
It took us a long time to get to this point. It's going to take us a long time to get out. But I think this really gives us a kickstart.
That's next time on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon at 1 on WHYY.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen. Just a recap here. Philadelphia has seen an influx of 20 to 34-year-olds, also known as millennials, in the last decade, attracted by affordable rents, the vibrant culture, the amenities. They have helped to revitalize the city. The pressing question now is, will they stay and raise their families in the city? We're talking about this report by the Pew Charitable Trust that talked to a lot of these millennials to find out how they view the city and what they think about their future. We do want to hear from you at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. Elizabeth Spencer joins us now. She's a Delaware County native, currently living in Hillsborough, North Carolina, moving there last November from Philadelphia. She and her husband have a three-month-old daughter. They still own a house in South Philly. And Elizabeth Spencer, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
It's great to be here, Marty.
So why did you move out of the city in November?
Well, it was definitely a career opportunity for us. Over the 5 years that we lived in Philadelphia together and were married, my husband was trying to find a job within the city limits in his field of pharmaceutical advertising. And after spending those 5 years with long commutes either to Bucks County or to the Princeton, New Jersey area, he was recruited to take a job down here in Raleigh, North Carolina, that would be both a promotion for him and a chance to create a more sustainable life for us in terms of commute and working hours and also cost of living.
Were you, that's interesting. Were you reluctant to leave the city? Had you wanted to try to figure out how to stay in Philadelphia?
Oh, definitely, definitely. I mean, I've been living in Philadelphia most of my adult life since I started college at Drexel when I was 18. So I have always loved living in the city, have a lot of friends there, was volunteering, joining neighborhood associations. I would say trying to kind of set myself up in the way that Matt Oles described earlier of having that commitment to community. And my husband as well wanted to stay, but we just felt like we were getting to a breaking point when our daughter was born.
And you said where you live now is more affordable than Philadelphia, and we were talking about how affordable Philadelphia is compared to a lot of other cities.
Yeah, well, I think Philadelphia is very affordable. I think what broke us was the fact that my husband was working outside of the city, and I also was working as an adjunct English instructor and could not find all of my work in Philadelphia. So both of us needed to have a car to commute to jobs outside of the city. So we were spending a lot of money on gas and car insurance and maintenance and that kind of thing.
Larry, let me get you back in on the conversation because one of the issues that's critical to this group of people is employment, finding jobs that allows a family like Matt to stay in the city, but obviously didn't work out for Elizabeth.
Yeah, we certainly found that in our research that there are a lot of people who thought they could not kind of fulfill their career path staying in the city. And it's also the sheer number of jobs as well. I mean, the number of jobs in the city right now is about the same as it was right before the recession really hit. A lot of other cities have gone past their pre-recession levels. Philadelphia now is still right about there. There was a little bit of an uptick in the most recent data. But, you know, if you look at the last 4 or 5 years as a group, I mean, it hasn't been very encouraging, despite the fact we've had a lot of encouraging signs, again, with the growth of population overall, the growth of millennials, the immigrant population growing, a lot of sort of positive things for the city. But the jobs picture is still tough.
Matt, I'm just curious about from you work at a law firm in Philadelphia, but also from your friends, your neighbors, are jobs an issue, finding the right kind of job in Philadelphia?
I think it's an important factor that needs to be considered. A lot of in our neighborhood, a lot of people have jobs in the city. Some people make the reverse commute out of the city. For us personally, I mean, I work on Market Street. My wife works down the street on Market Street. Our son goes to preschool two blocks from my office on Chestnut Street. I mean, it's all very convenient for us, and I feel very fortunate that we're all able to walk to where we need to go from our neighborhood. But I can imagine the calculation changing if that wasn't the case. If I had to make a commute an hour outside the city every day, it really changes things. I mean, if you're driving that far anyway, right, why not live out there? You have to balance all of that.
As Elizabeth said, a reverse commute is really tough.
Yes.
Because you don't have the traffic issues necessarily, but you're paying the city wage tax because you're living in the city, so you don't have the benefit of that. You have to have a car, which can be very difficult in certain neighborhoods. You have to pay car insurance, which is much higher in the city than the suburbs. So you're ending up sort of getting the costs of both sets of costs without a lot of advantages. It's not a good equation.
Elizabeth, I know you have a little baby. Were schools an issue for you and your husband as you thought about whether to stay or whether to go?
Yeah, schools were definitely on our mind. I think before the latest budget crisis, I had envisioned being able to send our children to the public schools and be a committed parent and get involved. We were definitely troubled by the cuts to funding and the cuts of guidance counselors and nurses, and it seemed like the trend was going in the direction of parents fundraising just to buy textbooks and basic elements of education that we would tend to take for granted. And I think taxes in that same vein were also on our mind, and we're certainly happy to pay taxes for public services and believe in that exchange. But we felt like we were paying a lot of taxes and not necessarily seeing those public services be funded through the tax dollars. And we knew that we would never make enough money to send our child to a private school. So the option would be either to send her to a public school in Philadelphia or move out of the city.
Mm. And final question to you, Elizabeth, because I know you still own a house in South Philadelphia. Does that mean that you might come back at some time? Is that sort of leaving the door open for you?
Definitely. That was definitely a big reason why we decided to rent out our house instead of sell it. My family is still in Delaware County and out in the Lancaster area. My husband's family is in Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. So we'd much rather be up there, and definitely it is more affordable to live in Philadelphia than to live in the suburbs. We didn't feel like moving to the suburbs of Philadelphia was an option for us either. So we're still hoping to make it work for us in Philadelphia in
the
future.
I appreciate you joining us and hope you're enjoying life in Hillsborough, North Carolina. Elizabeth Spencer, thank you for joining us today on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. We are going to continue our conversation. The phone just exploded at 1-888-477-9499. We are talking about a report that just came out from the Pew Charitable Trust called Millennials in Philadelphia, A Promising but Fragile Boom. Again, Larry Eichel, a director at the Philadelphia program at Pew, the author of this study. Also with us, Matt Olish, on the board of directors of Friends of Chester Arthur. That's a school in South Philadelphia. Also a lawyer at Fox Rothschild here in Philadelphia. Let me see what Mike from Germantown has to say. Mike, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You're very welcome.
Well, you've already went through the calculus, and I'd like to confirm that. My son broke my heart when my son and my daughter-in-law moved out of the city for the reasons you just outlined. Between what they paid in city wage tax and they purchased a home here, they saved $5,000 by moving to Valley Forge, another $1,000 for their car insurance, and they were nice enough to present my wife and I with grandchild number two.
Yeah,
and that child now can go to the sixth best school district in the state, where we have a school system that, either through incompetence or arrogance, spends $300 million more than it had. I mean, a lot more questions and answers, I think, with the Philadelphia school system.
Well, Mike,
and
let me
a
just...
A city with insatiable needs mm-hmm. that's focused on the 40% people living in poverty, where the We're the largest city in the country with the largest percentage of people in poverty. So frankly, although it sounds good with Larry's report to ask the city to focus in on the people they'd like to keep, but the people they have, they think that they have insatiable needs, and they're gonna make the thing worse. I just don't see any room for improvement. Sorry to say.
Well, I appreciate the call to Radio Times. The poverty rate is 25%, not 40% in the city. But Larry, let me go back to you. I mean, this is a city with problems. Yes, we know that. But you know, if you can figure out how to keep mats in the city, it seems that there would be some promise, fragile as it is.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important to keep people like Matt in the city for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons is, you know, he and his family, and they're moving into their prime earning years. They are taxpayers the city wants to keep, and having them in the tax base makes it easier to address all of the issues dealing with the poor and the other needs of the city, which are quite large. I would say that you know, in another report we sort of looked at the tax burden on people on Philadelphia residents compared to the suburbs, and I would say that if you are living in the suburbs and working in the suburbs, then the tax burden is probably lower in the suburbs than is in the city. But if you're working in the city, if you're still going to work in the city and move to the suburbs, that's really often the highest burden, much higher than living in the city, just to address the caller on that point.
But Matt, do you feel the way Mike does, that the city is just focused on poor people and you're sort of a forgotten player in this city?
I suppose you could characterize it like that. I don't really think so. I think we've kind of made what's important to us enough of a priority where we're going to get involved and we're going to see that what we want to happen is going to happen. So I don't think we feel comfortable just sitting back and washing our hands and saying, all right, well, it is how it is, and what can we do? I think it's more, it is what it is. Now let's fix what needs to be fixed or get out there and get involved and make things even better where we see that things are going well. And that's kind of it's the approach we took with the school. I mean, the district is where it is. I mean, what's done is done. Dr. Height came in knowing what the situation was, and I think he's doing his best with a difficult situation. But people can either, you can either run from the situation or you can dive right in and try to help. So I think that's what we're trying to do. I think it's something that can be done on a neighborhood by neighborhood basis. I think every neighborhood deserves a great neighborhood school. And part of that involves neighborhoods taking ownership of their school, which is what we've tried to facilitate and I think what we're doing.
Is crime an issue, I mean, that you and your neighbors worry about, think about in terms of to safety, being out on the streets, thinking of your children perhaps playing outside?
Not really. Not in our neighborhood. I feel very safe in our neighborhood. I mean, there are always some issues and there's things that happen, but I mean, we know our entire block. Our friends of ours, they know their blocks. I mean, everyone knows everyone. It's a very diverse neighborhood, but it's also a very friendly and social neighborhood. So I think that goes a long way in the comfort level that we have. I've never felt unsafe walking around our neighborhood.
Go ahead, Larry.
I think it's interesting in our polling, crime, you know, it's a more important issue for older people than for younger adults. And whether that's reality or perception, I'm not quite sure, but younger people don't see it as big an issue. And I think generally in the city, it's not seen as quite as big of an issue as it was in the past. I mean, it's still a big concern, and you know, the homicide rate was quite a bit lower in 2013. It's off to a not very good start in 2014. But still, I think there's a sense that in a lot of areas of the city, it's not as big a concern as it used to be.
Let me get, looks like Rich from Gulf Mills to join us. Rich, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi. How are you today?
Good. How are you?
Good. It's just, I'm an attorney. I live in the suburbs. I commute in town. The fabric of the city life is wonderful. The difficulty is from a position of moving in town or moving my kids in town and going to school in town is that the education system in Philadelphia is such an impediment to building the economy in the entire region that while the people trying to rebuild Philadelphia should be lauded, it appears to the novice or the people fresh in town that it's such an insurmountable task because there's just failure after failure after failure of every different type of effort. And the problem with the charter schools is they're now just bleeding the schools dry.
Well, Rich, let me take your point because you're painting a very bleak picture of the Philadelphia of the schools in Philadelphia, and I just want to turn to Matt, who's working with a school in his neighborhood to try to ensure that it's the kind of place that he would send his child and other kids in the neighborhood. Is it that bleak?
I don't think it is. I mean, I think obviously the financial situation is not ideal, and there are things that need to be done, and there are things that need to be done beyond what can be accomplished locally here with community involvement and even our local government. I mean, there has to be some sort of statewide recognition that we need more money. I mean, to put it simply, and there certain politicians and people need to get on board with that. But there are movements going on to try to influence that. From our perspective, we try to stay out of politics. We just control what we can control, which is our neighborhood, our school. And again, I really think it's something that every neighborhood can do. You don't have to be a neighborhood where there are upper middle class families all together. I mean, every group of people has their strengths and their resources and things that they can bring to the table, no matter what socioeconomic background you're a part of.
Go ahead, Larry.
There was a fascinating observation that someone who follows cities made on a blog a month ago. This is not an original thought of mine.
Okay.
If you take the largest cities in the country and you list them according to the percentage of the population that is school age, you will find that the cities that are generally deemed to be the most successful, the most thriving cities, you know, Boston, Washington, Seattle, San Francisco, are the ones with the smallest percentage of school-aged children. Don't know whether that's cause or effect, but it's an interesting, you know, thing to look at, and I think it's suggests that, you know, there aren't a lot of cities that are doing a great job of public education. The urban education is just a really tough nut.
Right.
But clearly the perception of the Philadelphia system is incredibly negative, and the latest round of financial problems, which we also polled on over the summer, I think one of the problems with it creates this sense of uncertainty. It's not just that the schools may be underfunded and that they have problems, but you just kind of don't know from year to year what you're going to get. And I think some people's reaction to that is to head for the hills.
Well, Elizabeth Spencer kind of mentioned that. We're going to take another short break, get back to our conversation, talking about millennials in Philadelphia with Larry Eichel and Matt Olish. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. Send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, or send us a tweet at Marty Moss Cohen. We'll be right back.
Supporting WHYY, the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, dedicated to promoting informed and engaged communities, and committed to helping public radio advance quality journalism in the digital age. More at knightfoundation.org.
On the next Fresh Air, making money from climate change. Journalist Mackenzie Funk says some businesses and countries see benefits from global warming and are moving to seize opportunities. New shipping lanes, oil, gas, and mineral deposits, and claims to threatened resources, including drinking water and arable land. Funk's new book is Windfall. Join us.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 on WHYY.
The Super Bowl is the NFL's annual golden egg, but is the league taking proper care of the goose?
I'm sure there are a number of people who are genuinely concerned about the health of the players, but I'm also not so naive as to think that there aren't many who are looking strictly at the bottom dollar.
Broadcast legend James Brown next time on The Takeaway from PRI, Public Radio International.
Today at noon on WHYY.
Supporting WHYY, Bryn Athyn College, quality liberal arts in a spiritual setting since 1877. Details at 267-728-4218 or brynathyn.edu.
This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscowain. We're talking about a new report called Millennials in Philadelphia, a promising but fragile boom, a new report released by the Pew Charitable Trust. And again, Larry Eichel, a director of the Philadelphia program at Pew. Also with us, Matt Olish. He's on the board of directors of Friends of Chester Arthur, a public school in South Philadelphia. He's also a lawyer with the law firm of Fox Rothschild. And again, taking calls at 1-888-477-9499. We have a tweet from Ben. According to report, are millennials seeing their interests represented by Philly elected officials? That's to you, Larry. Did you look at that?
We didn't really look at that. And that's a really good question. And I think, you know, that our political system tends to do a better job of representing people who've been here for a while
than these young folks.
Not so good on new arrivals. But clearly, you know, our polling found that jobs and schools are the things that millennials care about a lot. And I think our political system understands that those are the big issues and very hard to address.
Do you feel like you're not represented by the people you voted into office or others voted into office, Matt?
I think it depends on what level they're serving. It on a more local level, I feel like we do have good relationships and communications with our local elected officials. Our group, the Friends of Chester Arthur, we've had an event with Mayor Nutter, and we met with former Governor Rendell. We have great relationships with our local representatives, and they're all very supportive of what we do. So from our perspective, we feel like we can voice our concerns over something and people listen. From a bigger picture level, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, go ahead.
Obviously, one of the challenges also is getting a lot of young adults involved, because a lot of them are not, they've been in a place for some of them for a relatively short time. They're not sure how long they're going to stay. They are less likely than long-term residents sometimes to get involved.
Let me get, looks like Representative Jordan Harris to join our conversation. Now, go ahead, you're on Radio Times.
Good morning.
Good morning.
First let me say I'm glad to hear that you had Friends of Chester Arthur on. They are a phenomenal public school and a public school advocacy group, neighbors, very interested in their school, and that school is in my district. And, I think in addition to that, the conversation on millennials is extremely important. And while, yes, as an elected official and as many elected officials may focus on long-term residents, I think if we want to have a serious conversation about the future of our city, the future of our commonwealth, the conversation has to revolve around what are we doing to keep young people in the city of Philadelphia, in the state of Pennsylvania. And listening to the issue that jobs is definitely one of the things on the top of the list, it prompted me to call in and talk a little bit about something that I've been kicking around and I've been working on, and that's looking at maybe providing job preference for young people who go to our state system schools and who decide to stay in Pennsylvania with regards to state employment. How can we make it more enticing for young people to not only go to our state universities, but after they graduate, want to stay here in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, in the city of Philadelphia, and work for us. If we believe in our product, we should be more than willing to do something like that.
Well, I think that's an interesting idea. I'm not sure, what kind of traction you're going to get in Harrisburg, but the idea of I guess, rewarding people for staying in the state. Matt, do you think that would make a difference in your life? I mean, if you got some kind of extra special reward for staying in Philadelphia?
I'm sure we'd have to consider it. I mean, we stayed here anyway, so without any sort of incentive like that. But I think it's something that would have to go into the calculation, and given the financial situations that sometimes come into play, I think it would have to be given, substantial consideration by families.
What do you think, Larry? No?
No, I just... I don't really have an opinion.
Okay,
about it.
Fair enough. Representative Jordan Harris, thanks for the call to Radio Times. Let me get Laura from South Philadelphia to join us. And Laura, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Oh, hi.
Hi there.
I live in South Philly. I actually lived in New York for a little while. And I'm an artist, and I fall into a lot of the categories that you guys are talking about. I consider myself poor. I actually reverse commute out of the city for a part-time job. But one of the reasons that I plan to stay in Philadelphia is that I, compared to New York, I think Philadelphia has a lot of opportunities in the arts and a lot of fledgling opportunities in the arts. So I feel that I've been able to help build the community here. So my question for you guys was how much you thought the arts and the community around the arts is helping keep younger people in the city, because I know for me that's a big factor.
I appreciate the call, Laura. Go ahead, Larry.
I think that is a factor, and it's good to hear a real-life example of that. You know, we do hear a lot about the creative community and the whole culture scene as being important to a lot of people, and, you know, Philadelphia has a lot of it. It has a tremendous number of arts and number of arts and cultural organizations. Just a tremendous amount going on, and for a lot of people, that's a real attraction.
Yeah. Do you take advantage of that, Matt? I know you have a little child. Sometimes that means you don't get to go to plays and things like that necessarily. But
yeah, the most recent arts we've been participating in is going to Disney movies and seeing things like that. But yeah, I mean, when I spoke about accessibility earlier, I think that that's a big part of it. I mean, all these things that the city has to offer, they're also accessible. So if we wanted to go out on First Friday and go down to Old City and see all the art galleries, I mean, it's all there. It's not far. It's all available to us as an option. So if we can get a sitter, yeah, well, we love to do that sort of thing.
We have a tweet from Jim. What do other millennials in other cities say about their cities? I bet almost all D.C. millennials say they will move in 5 to 10 years. Do you think that's a phenomenon for this age group, Larry?
Well, it's hard to tell. I mean, we didn't poll D.C. You know, I can't tell you what Philadelphia young adults would have said 20 years ago if we asked that question. It's probably something that that I'd be glad to see data on from other cities, but we don't have it.
Let me see what Karen from Westchester has to say. And Karen, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, I'm out in Westchester, and I'm the mother of a millennial who I think would love to come to Philadelphia when he finishes graduate school someday. He was born in Philadelphia and loves the city. What I'm concerned about when I first saw this report, I'm concerned about the conversation becoming what can we do to improve the schools to keep the millennials, as opposed to what can we do to improve the schools for all the kids. I'm finding the conversation, I fear, will go in the direction. You know, I sit out here in the suburbs comfortably with my heart breaking for the kids who are already in Philadelphia, and they should be the top priority. So I don't like the tenor of, you know, the way I can see the conversation turning. What can we do to help this group? Well, there are a lot of...
Well, you know what, Karen,
right now.
Let me get an answer to your question, and I appreciate you raising that. And Matt, let me go back to you, because perhaps we need to understand the kids that go to Chester Arthur.
Sure. So... like I said, we started our group to support the school before really any of us had kids. I think a couple of us had kids. But the idea and our philosophy is we want to improve the school. We want to support the school and make sure that every kid in our catchment, in our neighborhood, has the best education they possibly can have. I mean, this isn't just about our son. This isn't just about the children of our board of directors or anything like that. I mean, this is about every child who lives in our neighborhood, and we think that every neighborhood is entitled to a great neighborhood public school so that every child in that catchment can attend. So, I mean, this was not a, you know, we want to stay here, so let's make the school the way we want it to be. Like I said, we thought the school was already pretty good. So this was about making the school the best it could be for every child in the neighborhood.
Go ahead, Larry.
If a concern about keeping the millennials causes the political system to make the school system better, I think that'll be better for everybody. It won't be just better for millennials. You know, whatever makes that happen, it sort of doesn't matter. What matters is the outcome, and that would, you know, that would affect everyone.
And I guess, I mean, more millennials like Matt in more neighborhoods might bring about some better schools?
Yeah, you would think so. And, you know, and in 5 or 10 years, a huge percentage of the school children in Philadelphia are going to be the children of millennials. So, I mean, this, you know, and a lot of, some of them are now the children of millennials. So, I mean, helping the school system for whatever reason, making the school system better for whatever reason, right, obviously would be a good thing for the city.
I mean, it's interesting that this is a conversation that has basically, you know, revolved around the schools in Philadelphia. Does that surprise you, Larry?
No. No, I mean, you know, we study a lot of issues. We poll, we look at a lot of groups, and so much of everything comes back to jobs and schools.
Right. And when we're talking about jobs in Philadelphia, it's often been described as eds, meds, and beds. So education, medical school issues, and beds, meaning what, hospitality?
Right.
I mean, does this have a diverse employment picture?
Well, the city does have a diverse employment picture, but it has certain strengths, and there are other areas, obviously, where it's not as strong. You know, it's strong in the legal profession. I mean,
right,
that's an area where it's strong. But eds and meds and hospitality are where it's strong. And for certain other things, sometimes the opportunities are a lot better in other places.
We have an email from Amanda. She lives in Germantown. Had the fifth shooting on the corner. Every time it happens, she thinks, what am I doing here?
Yeah, well,
I mean, a heartbreaking situation on all levels, obviously.
Right. That will do it. And as I said, even though public safety, as I say, I think is not as big a concern among millennials as among older Philadelphians, and it's not as big a concern among all Philadelphians as it used to be, you know, if it happens in your neighborhood, it's a huge concern. Or if it happens to you, or if it happens to somebody you know. You know, it's very personal, very real, and it's, I think, really hard getting past that for a lot of people.
Yeah. Matt, do you know people that have been the victims of crimes or observed shootings the way Amanda has?
When we first moved into the neighborhood, it seemed like it would happen every now and again, and I'd hear stories about it, or I'd heard stories of when it happened a few years before we moved in. But it really, at least where we are, it isn't as much of an issue, although I will say that for where it is an issue, it needs to be addressed. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's obviously a huge concern, and it's something that'll just drive people away. I mean, again, to go back to the schools, because that's obviously my wheelhouse, but
sure.
I mean, one of the reasons why we were so high on our school once we actually got out and saw it is because it's a safe school. I mean, you hear horror stories about schools with crime issues and violence. I mean, it was perfectly safe. Everyone was behaved. I mean, it was very under control from that perspective. So when you have that, I mean, you already have a great foundation there.
Larry, are we also seeing the parents, I guess if I can say, of millennials? I don't like the word millennials, but, it works for our conversation. The parents of millennials saying, hey, I'm going to move in the city as well, probably for different reasons, their past child rearing and some of these school decisions.
Yeah, we hear a lot about that. And if you look at the numbers, there's some evidence that it's starting to happen. But I think I think we will see more and more of it. You know, the city is a very attractive place for empty nesters because it's for a lot
for
of the
reasons
same reasons that
about.
Millennials like it. There's a lot to do. It's convenient. You know, you don't have to have a car, or you certainly don't have to have two cars. You don't need as much space of your own. You don't want to deal with that yard that was so great when you had kids. But yeah, I mean, we're starting to see that, and I think a lot of the construction you see in the city, a lot of the high-rise construction, is sort of based on the idea that a lot of empty nesters are going to come back. A lot of aging baby boomers like the two of us, Marnie.
Yes, we are aging baby boomers. What about immigrants? We're almost out of time here, but we haven't really is that also a factor in bringing young people to the city?
To some degree. I mean, immigrants are a huge part of why Philadelphia's population drop ended and why it started to turn around. You know, I think in the last several years, the evidence suggests that the millennials have been a bigger part of the story. But if you look back over the last 20 years, immigrants are a huge piece of what has sort of helped revive the city.
Well, on that note, my thanks to the both of you for joining us today on Radio Times. Larry Eichel, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And he's a director of the Philadelphia program at the Pew Charitable Trust, author of Millennials in Philadelphia, Promising but Fragile Boom. Matt Olish, thank you for joining us as well.
Thank you very much for having me.
You're very welcome. He's on the board of directors of Friends of Chester Arthur, also a lawyer in the law firm of Fox Rothschild. Go to whyy.org/Radio Times. Kevin Griffin, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Susan Greenbaum, Patty McMahon, Debbie Builder, and Emily Bryant. We remember the life of singer-songwriter and activist Pete Seeger, who died last night at the age of 94, by closing the show with his song, Turn, 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 from the album Live in 65.
To everything, turn, 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 there is a season. A time for every purpose under heaven. A time to be born, a time to die, a time to plant, a time to reap, a time to kill, a time to heal, a time to laugh, a time to weep. To everything, turn, 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 there is a season. A time for every purpose under heaven. A time to build up, a time to break down, a time to dance, a time to mourn, a time to cast away stones, a time to gather stones together.